Welcome to the Construction Technology News of the Week with Nathan Wood and Alex Sidorov.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality apps and robotics, we started the Contech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in Contech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's Contech Crew time.
All right, Nathan, what do you got on your board today for interesting articles? Or this is an interview. I like this one.
Yeah, I was skimming through LinkedIn, found this one. I think it was Phil Bernstein that shared it, but an interview on the Harvard Design Review, but essentially an interview between architects, academia, and a contractor. I think you know Alexis with Suffolk Construction, Jeff, but I thought, again, for those of you that are outside the industry that are trying to learn more about this nuance of like, wait, why has this BIM thing not solved all this stuff already? Disbelief of like why we haven't done this yet. They do a pretty good job, I think. It's going to have a little bit of architect bias in it naturally, but of explaining a little bit of the architect's perspective of the liability, sort of the challenges they face of not being paid for anything other than what they're delivering. So until that changes, again, follow the money. I think, Alex, in our interview earlier in the week, you talked about your brother and challenges with the engineers and whether it's statics or that engineering design and all those iterative designs that they're often, depending on the contract model, not paid for those iterations or those hours aren't necessarily accounted for. And those are costs that, if paid for, should result in huge savings downstream. But often we end up fighting over these little buckets at the beginning. So again, for those of you that are not familiar with integrated project delivery, kind of why it didn't work, and kind of some of their projections. One thing I do think is interesting that I want to get you guys' take on when it comes to this whole, okay, we've got a designer's model and then we've got the construction model. How do we solve for the fact that they're, you know, going to continue to be two separate things? And I think it was Phil in there made this argument that they will exist in parallel for a time, that as the architect's model, as the designer's model is getting towards what is their endpoint, which is really the permitted status with whatever that local jurisdiction is, that the construction model will get to a certain point, and then after that permit point, it will just become sort of the de facto model. But that, you know, up until that point, there will be two kind of parallel models. So again, like how do you now almost, I'm thinking of like a gamma, I guess there could be some gamma AR, because depending on the designs, there's progressive designs where you have steel already up, but you're still designing MEP. So you could be flipping between, you know, your contractor model versus your design model within both of them. I mean, I don't know. Is that something, Alex, you've seen any use case around? Or I don't know how much you've learned of just this whole mess of how designers and contractors work within BIM, because I learned some stuff through this at least.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more.
The fact that everybody uses their own model, even though they might have a perfect basis together to start with, but everybody just prefers doing stuff on their own, I think this is something which needs to be solved. And this is something which can be solved not just in the minds of people, but actually from those who are paying them, saying, guys, just stop doing stuff on your own, right? But this was very difficult until now, I must admit, because everybody has or doing their job in the software which they prefer, right? And design software is very, very different. And I think we do see a trend, a little bit of openness, I would say. Right now, the integration between different platforms, which works more and more seamlessly. So I think this will drive the fact that in the end, you have just one central model, which everybody can access from their own tool. But we are still a little bit out, right, from this.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think it's some of it's, depending on what the software you're using, some of it's the companies don't feel comfortable sharing the data for points made in here around liability and exposure. But there are still some softwares that will not be named here that are holding out and kind of not playing the whole IFC game of open data exports and stuff. So I don't know. I don't know what Jeff, you got any tricks up your sleeve of how we convince those powers of B to get on board with open data and integrations, because it seems to be an important topic.
Well, I mean, open data and integration is a key to it. But I think, again, we'll go back to fundamentally, just like the software is always looking to be the solution, to be the winner. I think, again, in a lot of these conversations, especially between, you know, architects, designers, and construction, is, you know, one of them wants to win. It's like, guess what? Neither of you is going to win. And by the way, neither of you should, because again, diversity of experience, diversity of idea, and diversity of thought is the way that things get delivered. The problem is we all play some zero-sum game where we think, again, we have to win, when really what we need to do is incorporate design techniques, which is what Alexis is trying to do. So if you hadn't listened to the show with Alexis McGuffin, go back. It was awesome. It was such a good show. She's such an intelligent, fun person to work with, and her perspectives are pretty, you know, she's the one who, in my opinion, brought up deep collaboration, like going beyond superficial collaboration of, oh, we've signed a contract together and we're going to play nice and we're going to federate our model and we're really not going to make any use of it. It's like, no, we got to go beyond that. And, you know, she at Suffolk has this opportunity to take a role where she can dive deeper. So she's trying to break through some of that, but ultimately, just kind of like if you want to listen to the episode right before this with Alex, we talked about continuous improvement. It's about architects not blaming construction for the feedback they get on constructability of their designs, and construction not doing the same blame on design about their, you know, the constructability of their designs, and actually coming together and figuring out for the ultimate winner, the asset owner. Right. The person, people, environment, municipality, government that this project is being delivered to and delivering at a level we can. I think I've said Clark Ellis's name in almost every one of the most recent episodes. I swear he's not paying me to say that. Although
his ears on fire right now, his ears are burning so bad.
Maybe I'll hit him up. But he sent me the book, How Big Things Get Done. And if you wanted me to go a step higher on my soapbox, that's probably the worst book to send me, because it's gotten me up even further. So if you haven't read How Big Things Get Done, you need to do it right now. Just go, I mean, just listen to the beginning of it and you're going to lose your mind at the statistics and the probability of how awful we are at getting anything done. But here's the cool part. IT projects are just as bad as construction projects. Projects of all types. Here's the beauty. Everybody is horrible at this. Like, inherently horrible. It's like 0.5% of any project comes in on time, on budget, and realizes its value. Right? There's a critical overlay there. 0.5%. That means 99.5% of all projects fail in some measure of deliverable measurement. So it's not just a construction problem. It's actually a project and a people problem. And we have a cool opportunity to think differently and apply some of the learnings to it to deliver our projects better. And I think no cooler of a place to unpack this than BIM. You know, I was misquoted with this with Tui Cordemosh recently from Groundbreak. It's about time for BIM. What he meant by that was, after 30 years, it's about time we actually realize the value of a truly integrated model that incorporates the learnings, knowledge, and constructability from all the groups. And anybody who's fighting against that, you need to look yourself in the mirror and realize you are the problem. So if you feel like I might be talking to you, well, that's your own problem. So you figure it out. Alex, I'm interested, you know, just 30 years, man, we've been seeing it and realizing, you know, now that you come from outside of just this industry and how many projects truly fail. Like, construction's not unique in this.
No. You're right. Most projects fail. The thing is that I think construction is much more public. That's a problem. And once things are get done in construction, they are done, right? They're physically there. So the problem with software, I mean, I have seen my fair share of software companies, right? And yes, projects do get messy and projects get ditched. But in the end, it's just a couple of ones and zeros which get ditched. But if you have a couple of tons of cement just lying around because, well, didn't work the way you wanted, that's tough. That's just something you see and cannot get rid of.
Yep. I mean, that was the thing is one of the examples in how big things get done is Kmart, right? I don't think anybody realizes that Kmart's failure and bankruptcy was based on an IT project to try to keep up with too many of the emerging Walmart, Amazon, et cetera. And it tanked them. Why? Because you didn't see new, you saw disappearing Kmarts off the thing. And now they're Bass Pro Shop or something else, right? But physically, when construction fails at its worst, it collapses. It physically happens. A bridge collapses, a tower crane falls, part of a building collapses. So you are right. We fail in the physical world, which makes our failures much more visible and much more tangible. So I like your drawing of those two things together. That's why I think we also get the whip so much. You know, we get the stick when honestly, if we failed at the level of a lot of these IT projects, most of you couldn't leave your house in a car to drive anywhere because the bridges wouldn't be there. The highways wouldn't be standing. You know, the buildings that you go to try to work in or the house that you live in wouldn't be standing. So interesting. There's my soapbox, Nathan.
Well, no, it's a good point. You don't see IT failures, whereas like, I mean, especially highway construction, anything like that, a delay or an added cost. I mean, everybody sees that because you see it in your tax dollars and you see it in the traffic. Right? It's very palpable.
Well, and the other thing is we don't leave. Let's take a school, for instance, right? It's a board referendum. It's usually some sort of thing that's got to get passed by the taxpayers. It's never how much we say it's going to be. You don't leave a school half built.
Mm-hmm.
You finish building it,
mm-hmm.
right? IT, you don't have to see that a lot of these have been scrapped. MySpace. Anybody go there, right? Anybody been to MySpace recently? Nope, I don't think so. Like, those IT ones, they just disappear. They don't leave a lasting footprint. So again, there's a difference in that. So there's also physically we've got to finish out the project or you wouldn't have, except for Las Vegas, you don't see half standing buildings in many places.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, if you get a chance to read it, I mean, again, it was a transcribed interview discussion, panel discussion, but man, you could almost read the tension in some of the parts of just this natural fighting over the money, because again, money is a big deal, and we never think that construction is going to cost as much as it ultimately does, and it could be less expensive, it could be more efficient, but that's going to take trying new things and failing early to save money later. So a whole kind of different mindset. So
yeah, connect it back to Charlie. If we spent more time in the model, more time planning, and more time as a group sequencing and figuring out how we were going to execute it. And that's, you know, one of the insights into how big things get done is planning, planning, planning. You know, you go slow to go fast, not go fast to go slow. So there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, but I think this is something we see also a number of times. Again, you know, idle time on construction is something which is completely impossible to imagine, right? So you need to be doing something all the time. So, okay, you're supposed to doing this, but okay, you cannot do this. So let's just do this. We have the drawing anyway, right? And that's where typically one of the use cases we discuss about augmented reality is that, okay, I see that, but wait, if I'm doing this now, the next guy who needs to put a duct above the pipe I'm currently installing, there's no way he can get there, right? You don't see this on a drawing, but if it's there, you think maybe I need at least to double check with somebody. And at least this double checking That's what drives results.
Being busy to be busy, stay busy to stay busy, a lot of times can actually cost you in the long run. So great point, Alex. Nathan, then, what else you got
well,
for us,
and
buddy?
Then final point on that is the psychological safety for that person to ask the question of like, hey, why is that different from that? Because I remember asking some of those questions and being sort of shut down of like, why are you asking that question sort of a thing? It's like, well, that's not going to help anybody. So again, off the culture soapbox, let's talk about some data. So I found a big old report that Bluebeam put out, looks like in October, on their AEC technology outlook for 2025. And Alex, we get to get your input because I know I looked at the breakdown. It's almost 50% U.S. versus Europe and a little bit of Asia, but it's definitely a global perspective across AENC, so designers and contractors. But again, looking at the main benefits and usage in of technology in the building lifecycle, it's natural that our top two are going to be around increased efficiency and productivity, as well as improved product planning and organization. Thanks for just mentioning here. Reduce errors and rework are kind of down the list. So that's kind of what you'd expect to see. One of the things I did think was interesting on the, as they were asked what the types of technology that they use in the building lifecycle, the number one there was BIM above CAD. So as much as we can't seem to get rid of CAD, it is good to see that BIM is ranked above it, and then followed by project management software after that. So I think, again, that's going to be representative of the larger design segment of the group, and the fact that there are a lot of designers that are using BIM or CAD but not using project management softwares, but a good chunk that still are. It was interesting to see how many folks are using 46% are using some sort of collaboration tool like a Slack or a Teams, which is sort of a more collaborative, progressive way of communicating, and one that was definitely a new thing to do pre-COVID, but seems much more standard practice these days, which is good. Last bit, they did get into AI, because of course we couldn't have a session here without talking about AI. But as they asked who was using AI the most, or I guess where it's being used, the number one answer was in the design phase, no surprise there, followed by planning. Construction was only 27%, and then just above 26% for those that don't use AI for anything in the process. So again, it was a kind of interesting spread there. And last one, Jeff, I want to ask your thoughts, because I was really surprised when they asked about the IT budget allocation to AI. So how much of your IT budget is allocated to AI? 15 to 25% of the folks said that they spend 40% of their IT budget on AI, which I thought was kind of astounding. But 40% will spend 11 to 25%, but there are some still that are spending significantly, you know, up to half or more of their budgets on AI. So I don't know what all is even out there to spend on to cover your AI IT, unless I guess anything Microsoft is AI. So now your entire Microsoft budget is.
I was going to say, I think some of this is marketing semantics. Like it's okay. AI because I put AI at the end of it, you right. know, like,
well, Procore's AI now, right?
What?
Procore is AI now, right?
Yeah, everybody's AI now. You know, everybody's got an AI play now. So I love how a lot of these threads are weaving themselves together right now, is that like if you're spending that much on AI, you're gapping yourself and probably creating a level of tech debt that you don't need to be carrying around, when actually you could be fundamentally, a lot of the AI, I hear people spending on it and I'm thinking like, honestly, do you really need to be spending that much onto a product that's actually a layer on top of your other products, right? I would think that for a minimal investment, you could be maximizing the output of it if you were maximizing your budget in other places. It doesn't surprise me that, you know, you're seeing some more of it used in the design phase and maybe less of it used in the construction phase. This whole thing's going to go on a continuum, right? It's got to be built and used in a lot of cases in products ahead of construction through the design and the engineering and those processes before it's going to reach construction and then have a feedback, unless you're talking about, you know, simple things that are powerful, writing RFIs, you know, emails, communication, some of that stuff, sure, it's possible. But, you know, to me, you know what was interesting to me is that operation was below the amount that of I'm not going to use it at all. I thought operationally, and Alex, I'll be interested in your take on this, is that like asset managers would be, just given the amount of disparate data sources that you have to deal with when it comes to a building asset of a project asset of some sort, that there would be more asset managers using AI of some sort to consume the data to make some sort of sense of it.
This is the exactly the direction I wanted to take it, actually. No, because I agree. So I obviously listen to a lot of different contact pitches, right? And I would say it feels like almost everybody says, hey, we are bringing information to the site. We are bringing information here and there. And there's already so much information. It is crazy. Nobody gets through this whole data. And most of this data is frankly pointless, right? I think, what is it that that people are quoting? Like 70% is dark data. Right? And we are not making it easier. So just slapping AI on something which will generate additional nice phrasings around something which could have summarized in two words, this will just create buckets of data which is completely pointless for everybody, right? I think AI is used as a buzzword. We agree. I'm a little bit, I needed to smile a little bit when you said BIM is one of the technologies used. BIM is not a technology, right? BIM is it's a methodology to work. And for me, talking about AI is like talking about other types of technology you use, which are used in your products, right? So it will be mature and actually used at the moment where people will stop talking about AI because it just, in the nature of how the product works, right? It enhances the product. I definitely agree with that, Jeff, that it goes about consuming the data, which is already there, to make sense of this, right? So I think construction is very human-driven, right? It's human-centric. Humans take decisions. And we take decisions because there is a lot of risk involved and you don't want to delegate this to anybody else, right? So all the information we have is something which enhances our decisions, right? That's a pitch we have for augmented reality. That's a pitch we have for reality capture and for all the other technologies, is that somebody who's supposed to take some decisions gets better data and data which is structured in a way that can be analyzed, right? So I agree AI will be used, but not the AI, it will be an AI-enabled product, which will be used a lot. And yes, it does surprise me that the asset owners are a little bit left out of this. Design is very easy to think about. Okay, I'm just do a prompt and then a model will pump up and I will do like 100 iterations of this and maybe I will stock all of 100 of them and I will never look at them again, right? And I don't know what your experience is, but usually when I write some text with ChatGPT, I need to rewrite them and refine-tune them. And in the end, I end up spending more time than I would have initially if I would have written it out myself, right? But it's maybe a sparring process, which can maybe not be underestimated. So yes, it's definitely nice. But I think 90% of my usage of AI is always just consuming information so I can not spend hours reading this, but just summarizing this to a point. And if I can take this now and use this further as an asset owner, that's amazing. So I will expect actually that this will rather see, we will place IoT sensors everywhere so we can get data at all the one point of time. So we can actually analyze this and use this once the construction is over.
To your point, I'll hand over to Jeff, but the difference, and I think we've talked about this before, the difference between we use AI as a software company to build our product and build our product better versus our product is AI. That's a very different statement. And Ian, even I think talking to Josh at Document Crunch, like he never intended Document Crunch to be an AI. Like it almost like adopted, we're probably half guilty for it. Of like calling it AI, like just because, you know, depending on how it is used. So I think there is a lot of that education and training. And really the last point in that I wanted to bring up in the data was, you know, what those top challenges were in adopting the technology, which number one, no surprise, is lack of training or technical skills, which I would add to that, again, the education, the communicating, are we even speaking the same language before it's actually into the button clicks? And then the second one there being the integration issues as we continue to talk about. So great discussion, but I know I've taken time. So Jeff, I'll hand it over to you.
Well, yeah, and before we go, I'm going to say, those of you that are spending that much on AI, cut half your budget for AI and put it all into training.
Yes.
Because ultimately, that's the best investment you can make, And our industry totally does not understand the depth and need for truly good training and truly good resources in training and good ways to reach people. Because ultimately, if you've got a bunch of crap data and you can't get your stuff from your field because they don't know how to use your tools, your fancy AI is not going to handle that for you. Although, Alex, at some point I want to revisit that idea of asset owners and IoT on everything. And that was something on the hype curve a while back that I jumped on because I still think that's going to be fascinating when it comes to, you know, people who own buildings, et cetera, and how that impacts it. So put that one aside. Let's LinkedIn that one and let's hit that one at a conference or something later. We do have to jump in. And mine's going to be a little short today because and a little bit self-serving. So you guys may have heard Yael Hannon on here before from Pels AI. They are a really cool new AI product, automating the takeoff. But she writes a really cool blog a lot and attends a lot of the conferences because they're, you know, getting a name for themselves and getting out there. And she actually attended a talk that I did recently with Kip Ivey and Travis Voss at SMACNA's annual convention around, you know, tech drive, revolutionizing construction efficiency and collaboration. And we had an absolutely packed and wonderful room, and we did it all with Mentimeter. You know, we make Charlie proud. It was a very interactive session in which we were getting the information from the group. And just to go back, there was a lot of, you know, worries and a lot of people looking at, you know, utilizing AI. And there was a fear and a friction for implementing AI. And what I really like on her take was AI isn't about implementing. It's actually about utilizing, right? Like the implementing happens at a lower level inside of other technologies that you're using, whether that's modeling software, whether that's project management software, whether that's detailing and authoring software, other types of software that then the AI is a layer over top of that it should be and should excel at being utilized quickly, and that it should be more about tuning it. So I'm going to connect two things together. Alex, you said, you know, you spend a lot of extra time with AI and that you could have just written it yourself. I've set up an environment for myself where I've taught one of them about me and how I write and gone through the process of iterating with it. So now when I need to do certain things, it's tuned. I can drop it in with a basic idea and it generates something very close to what I would do in a much faster process. I've also adapted some of my consulting processes to it that were the tedious processes of what I used to do. So I shouldn't say this out loud, should I? But like what used to take me 14 hours to do in a certain design thinking consultative approach takes me about 2 to 3 now, because these models have now, I spent the time in my day to train them, and they produce a much better product for me because I've trained them. And so I'm interested, you know,
but you said, ahead, you said it there, and that's what we often don't talk about is the hours that you took training it so that it only took 2 or 3 hours. So again, like that is that cost benefit. That's the whole McClemy curve with BIM and this whole argument for like why you should spend more time that you didn't used to spend doing something earlier when you don't have enough time because we're too busy being busy. And that's my problem is, other than, you know, having ChatGPT rewrite a few emails that I thought were pretty critical, I haven't done that time to train it and do all the things, but I know I need to, and I will when I force myself to prioritize it and make the time. But I think all of us are on this journey of like, okay, yeah, there's a million things I need to do. And it's, especially when you got a 4 and a 6-year-old as Alex and I do, but you know, that how do you make time in the day to do those things up front and justify as that's why you're getting the value that you're getting. So yeah, I wouldn't discredit the fact that you're saving that time doing it because you spent the time up front and you plan for it.
So Alex, I'm interested in your take on where we are and, you know, Yael's take on, you know, how you should be looking differently at AI.
No, I mean, absolutely right. Time invested makes up for this. That's for sure. But we go back to this. We're going back to this mindset, right? You need to be knowledgeable about what you don't know and what you want to get out of the solution. And this applies for AI like it applies for any other technology. But I think here it's much, much more critical because you, since it's tech, you expect it to be very well. So sometimes you just overlook stuff. And that's where the problems are. So again, I definitely concur that if you put the time to learn a technology, you can perfectly leverage, right? And this is, I think, what the disillusion we mentioned before that people have with old kind of tech, right? You bring them something and they expect this to do everything. They don't realize what it can and cannot do. But even beyond this, they just try it once and say, ah, yeah, takes me too much. I don't do it, right? So that's a mindset question.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting one too, because you know this is to give Josh Bone a second drop here. He always brings up the Edward Deming, you know, like, I tried change once, it was too hard. We're not gonna doing that again. Or I tried it once, I'm not doing that. It's, you're like, wait, no, like change is hard. Survival is optional. And secondly, it's not good enough to know what you need to do. You have to have a plan, and that plan is where things come to fruition. And I think what Yael's saying there is that like we're putting too much into the implementation side of this, whereas it's actually a realization side of the efforts of your work on the rest of your technology stack and how it comes up to where you are today. So that's it. My last one is just a little interesting because when I see something like this, I have to bring it up. And Nathan, I'm seeing this pop up on Plots, social media, on Project Mark, Salus, Caster, Toggle, ClearStory, Document Crunch, and Concentric, coming soon, built by builders. I was talking to Alex ahead of this going, this reminds me of the Firefest. And I'm like, what's going on? But I've seen it. Guys, you caught my attention. I'm hoping this episode comes out before you drop it. Probably won't. But either way, built by builders. I love a good play like this with a bunch of these folks coming together. I can kind of guess where it's coming from, but I thought it'd be kind of cool. I mean, Nathan, you see the logo now, right?
I'm looking at all of them. I'm trying to figure out like who posted when and what order, like who might be behind it. But I'm curious to find out. I will go through my channels and see if I can get the insights.
Well, I mean, honestly, and Alex, I'd love to get your take on it.
Yeah, I'm waiting for this to spread to Europe.
Built by builder spreads to Europe. Well, on the back end, I can think of Document Crunch. Josh Levy came from a general contractor, legal side, but general contractor. I know the team at Project Mark. They came from the owner's representative side. Salus is Gabe Guetta. He came from, he had his own contracting business, came from there. I mean,
Chris Callen with Plot. Yep. He's interested.
Yep.
Industry.
Chris Callen with Plot. We know Patrick Murphy with Toggle and where they came from as well. So, and Concentric is Steve, and he, same thing, he was a builder as well. So I'm feeling like we know where this is coming from, but I'm also wondering what they're doing with it.
Yeah. Well, and who should be in this group that's not currently? Now, if that's the thread.
It might be a thread. We'll see.
Yeah.
But hey, sometimes we leave things hanging. So let's leave things hanging. And hey, Built by Builders, you got my attention. Which one of you wants to come on the show and tell us what it means to be built by builders? Listen, thanks, Alex, for sitting down for the news, too, as well. We had a great interview, great news section. Always great to have a longtime listener, you know, and new friend on the show.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. It was amazing.
Nathan, I love the sweater. I love sitting down with you, my friend. Been great to talk this week.
Awesome. This is fun. Alex, thanks for coming on. Get some sleep.
Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for the Construction Technology News of the Week with Alex Sidorov and Nathan Wood. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is The Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.